Radio.
Part 2. Moving Beyond Lust and Pornography. A presentation by Father Thomas Lawyer during the Theology of the Body retreat held at the Mount Schoenstatt Retreat Center in Malgoa.
So let's look at some art, masterpieces. This is by a great French artist, Renoir. We do have a couple other artists in the audience here, right? So recognize some of this. So I feel like I'm got some assistance here in this. So now, what makes something beautiful? Now, in this case, we're using the human body as the motif. Because why did I say that? Why the human body? Because it what? It has the sum total of all beauty, right? The high point of God's creation, God's masterpiece, and it's got the sum total of beauty. So the artist is going to go into that reservoir of the sum total of beauty to learn how to portray and understand and deal with beauty. Okay? Things that make something beautiful are certain elements such as movement, composition. Here you've got three women. They're bathing, right? Okay, their bodies. Okay, you see their bodies. But you notice intentionality. Is there anything that you see here that is you sense is trying to entice you? Did you sense a kind of an innocence here? Or do you sense a kind of a ulterior intention by the artist? You shouldn't possibly, in its sense, anything but an innocent intention. But here the artist, as artists do, see, the thing that makes an artist an artist, an artist can look at anything like that you would pass by. The average person would not even notice. And they can stop and be absolutely fascinated by it. Because they can see all the beauty in that. They can take a single moment that is insignificant to you, to most people, but for them, it's profoundly beautiful. Now here's a moment. Now there's action here, which means these women are moving, all right? So the artist catches one moment, and he turns it into a masterpiece. Now, how does he do that? He does it by motion. One element is motion. Your eye, see, artists are professional brain manipulators. So are musicians, composers. See, when this artist went to make this painting, he had in his mind how he wanted your eye to move through his painting. And he's going to direct your eye. He's going to capture your eye. You are entirely under his spell because he knows the tricks. And he's going to move your eye through this painting. He's going to make you, he's going to dictate to you, control your experience of this painting by the elements of beauty that he'll work into it. A composer does the same thing with music. When you hear music, there's a movement there. You're moving through the piece, the song, or the piece, as the composer wants you to move through it, because he has an idea of beauty. And he knows that if you move through this piece like this, you will come to the end of that piece and say, wow, I like that song. Or a painting and say, that's beautiful. I like that painting. So the movement is in this direction. Usually we'll capture the high point with the face. And look at the face. She's looking down at this figure here. This figure has a very strong thrust this way in the front of the picture plane here, which brings you down here. And look at her leg thrust up there very dramatically. So your eye is already descending, coming down, being thrown back up, and being pushed over to her. She, in turn, leans in this way to continue the motion so you come back around. So you see, there's a beautiful flow, a beautiful rhythm. I can almost see, when I look at art, being an artist, when I look at art, I actually hear music. If you can imagine, it's like visual music. It's not music I can't hum a tune, but it's like I'm experiencing music, like I'm floating through this thing, like I can hear a music. And what he does also in this is he takes a motif that's repeated. And that motif is, what did I say yesterday about womanhood? Concentricity? Look what he does with concentricity. Look at how many concentric shapes are in this picture. And look what he does now. He puts it in the background. See that? Look how he painted the trees. Little puffballs, right? Why? Because they repeat this pattern and this pattern and this pattern and this pattern. You have a repeated pattern. That's called integration, called variations on a theme. It's a technique of art and music, of beauty, of poetry. And he's woven that into this painting. Okay, we can go on and on forever in this, but let's look at another one. Here's another moment. You can tell it's just a split second. She's getting dressed, right? Or undressed, whatever. She's in her bedroom, right? Now, what would be spectacular about that? Somebody getting dressed, whatever, just going through the motions. Ah, but to the artist, he sees something. He sees movement and beauty and color and contrast and gesture. And so he captures it. And there she is now. You see anything immodest about this? Again, the movement. Head to arm, down here. Circular shapes repeated, down here. And look at how the shapes that you see, the movement you see, the curves like that, are repeated in the clothing. See that? Same thing here. Lots of motion here. Look at this. There's a line. You're just eyes just going round and round and round and round. And it's moving real quickly through this thing. There's a lot of motion in this thing. It's swirling. There's a sense of swirling through this painting. And how does he get that sense? By painting the human body, by using the human body. The artist Gauguin, who's a French artist, he saw what was already starting to happen in Western culture. He saw that we were losing that sacramental vision of the human body. And because artists can see this way automatically, that's their gift, he got sick of it. He couldn't put up with it anymore. So he went to Tahiti, and he saw these people who lived naked or half naked. And you know what he saw in them by their nakedness? He saw true modesty. They weren't hung up about their body. And they dressed like they did because of the climate. And look what he's portraying here. There's a calmness. There's a naturalness. And he loved that. He stayed there in Tahiti. He saw that Western culture was somehow neurotic about sexuality, about the human body. And he just got fed up with it, as I am. That's why I do what I do. I'm fed up with it. It's wrong. It's stupid. And we have to finally move beyond it and see as God intended us to see. And I have to speak this way because God gave me the artistic ability and that vision. He wanted me to do something with it. I especially realized once I went to Rome and heard John Paul II, he wanted me to share this vision with whoever I can so they could see as I see, as an artist sees, as John Paul II sees. Now, in contrast, let's look at our culture. You guys have Hooters here? Hooters. What is Hooters? You know what that means? What does the name mean? Hooters, this franchise, was based upon, Hooter means you're gawking at women's breasts. And the women are hired based on their breasts. These are the waitresses of Hooters. Do you realize, to show you how screwed up we are, how many nicknames do you have for your elbow or your knee? How many do you have for your sexual parts? Well, one of those parts of a woman, they call Hooters. Oh, she's got some Hooters, man. And then they play on that. You look at like an owl. Look at her Hooters, man. They built the whole franchise on lust, on objectifying women. But what do? We take our families to Hooters. I had a parishioner who said to me, "Hey, Father, we went to Hooters last night with the family." I said, "I wouldn't step one foot in that place." "Oh, what do you mean? They got great wings." I said, "Yeah. And Playboy has great articles, too." Is this not a sign of a very disintegrated culture? There's a good comment on it. This actually was a true story. This woman in an airplane was breastfeeding her baby, covered up against the window. She had a window seat, and she was thrown off the plane. So this artist, as only artists can do, made the proper commentary on that. Here's a guy drunk out of his mind, wanting more booze. Here's another scotch, sir. Yeah, you can have that. And you, disgusting. Great comment on our culture. This is okay, but this is disgusting. Get off the plane. Is this not a culture that's sadly in need of the theology of the body? Okay, a little bit of how things work. A lot of our culture is not just pornography, but it's pornified, it's soft porn. And we sell everything with soft porn, usually using women's bodies. So here's how it works. Remember the thing about motion? See, the artists, the photographers, they know the tricks. I know the tricks, see? So I can get in the enemy's camp, see? I can, I fortunately, I'm working for God. They're not. At least I hope God thinks I'm working for him. Oh, I'm trying, you know? Now, they know the same trick. We both know the same tricks, see? But their tricks are not working for God. It's to entice you to lust and sell a product, such as this. Watch the motion here. See this? It starts here. There's a very dramatic movement. Boom, boom. And look what happens. Got her butt right there. What color is it? White, right? Look at how it stands out. The whole trick and what makes something imagery wrong is it leads your eye and traps it. It pauses your eye long enough to develop that enticement, that lust. That's especially true for men. Because in men, we have what's called an eye-mind coordination. Men live from here up. And a lot of women would differ with that, take issue with that. But men tend to live from here up. We have a very, very critical, rapid eye-mind coordination. Something happens from the eye to the brain real quick in a man. That's where it all happens, right there. And of course, the devil knows the theology of the body. So where the devil go? The devil goes right in here for the man. He knows to destroy a man, you get in here. You get in the eye-mind coordination right in there. It's very quick, very, very quick. He's right in there, see? He's right in there with pornography. That's why it's so effective. He knows the theology of the body. He knows how men are hardwired by God. That's why we have to know. So here's how it works. You go here, this way, up there. See how it keeps you, you're going like this? But what does it do here? Where's the product they want to sell? It's right there. See that? See how clever? Not so clever because to me, because I know the tricks. That isn't one. Look at that one. Now, nice combination. Look at the repeated patterns of the triangle here. Very cleverly done. Very nice composition. Good artistry there. But look what it's doing. Drawing your eye in such a way to there. Okay, here. Now, believe it or not, between these two, which would you say, neither one is modest, of course, but of the two, which would be less problematic? For me, believe it or not, it would be this one. Because when you have the body and it's presented as completely naked, what's happening there is no attempt to stop the eye. What's evil about styles like this is that they trap the eye. They draw the eye to certain places and make it linger to inspire the lust. That's why a lot of styles are wrong. So the girls don't understand. I have to go through this as a pastor. Every time the weather starts to get warm at church, I got to do the talk. The pastor's talk about ladies, your dresses, young ladies, you know. And they don't get it. They don't understand. They just think I'm just an old fuddy-duddy prude that's trying to ruin their fun. Because this is a style, this is fashionable, and this is what they want to wear to church. I try to teach them theology of the body and teach them what the problem is with these styles. That they're designed to trap the eye instead of to move through the body to present the whole body and the whole person, as John Paul II said. Classic, these are one of those classic examples. These are, they call them, I think, Daisy Dukes, whatever, these low hip hugger things. That's why I tell the girls, these are things that are very, very evil, and I'll tell you why. And here's with the intention. And I'll tell you why the designers designed that. They designed it so that when men look at you like that, what's going through their mind, you think it's going through their mind, oh, they're looking at me, they think I'm a nice, pretty girl, I got their attention. No, what's going through their mind subconsciously and the intention of the designer for that style is this. Now, girls, is that what you want? But that's because that's what's happening. Believe me, I know the secrets. Good thing I'm working for God. Otherwise, I could be dangerous. Now look at these two. Here's again another French painting, beautiful painting. Here's a girl. What's she doing? Put on a sock. Do you ever think that would be a subject for art? Some girl putting on a sock? But look at how beautiful it is. Look at the innocence. And now squint at it. Always squint at art because you find a lot of the secrets. Look at the movement here. Here's the head. Look at how it comes down. And look at how her white sock, it gets a little bit dark here, and then the white sock gets lighter. So it pulls you and kind of accentuates that. And look at that beautiful movement of her foot. Look at this curvature that you've got here. A beautiful composition all the way down, and you come back up again. Beautiful, beautiful composition. Very, very innocent. Look, she's bare-breasted, right? But you don't look at her breasts like the Hooters, right? Unless you're really a pervert, in that case, I'll smack you in the head. Knock it off, you know? Oh, you know, guys act like they're so helpless, you know? Oh, God, shut up. Knock it off. You know, learn to look already, you know? It comes, you know. Now, look at this contrast. Now, look at her. First of all, they always start by how the face looks at you. It's supposed to entice. That draws you in. See, because by nature, if someone's face is in your face, you get their attention right away. So you notice all these pornified images, they always have their face looking right at you. That draws you in first, okay? You're already captured. Bang. See, devil knows that. Devil knows that. When we look at faces, we get captured. So he makes sure that these artists and photographers have the face going. So you got the face thing going. So then your eye's going to go where? Where's it going to go? Look right here. Okay, look at her arm. See how her arm drops down very dramatically? It's kind of highlighted. So you're going to go, boom. Uh-oh, but wait a minute. Put on the brakes. What's this? She's wearing white, right? Basically, she's wearing white, right? But except where is she have color? Right in there. See that? And it's a bright color. It's like red, you know? And look at the shape. It's a V shape. So you got this and this drawing you down. It's like those pinball machines, ding, 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 and you're stopping, ding, 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 ding. It's like start here, going down, ding, 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 lust, 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 lust. And then eventually, if you pull your eye out, you come this way, up here, woo, there's a real dramatic fall, bing, and you finally come to the product you're trying to sell. A hush puppy. But you see what it did? It pulled you, especially the guys, through all kinds of potential for lust. So then you identify the product with the lust. See, the reason why I point these things out, so when you start seeing this stuff, it's like a vaccination. It's like you know what's going on. You have resistance to it now. You can always laugh at this stuff. I said, I know what you guys are doing. I was trained in art too, you know. You're not impressing me. Yes?
Majority of advertising is directed at women these days, but this is a woman's shoot.
Well, because it's also at women because it's trying to tell women you can be sexy with the shoe, with a hush puppy. Oh, golly, what a culture. Here we go. Another area to go into, and again with art, and this is one of my brands, I guess, in terms of overcoming lust and pornography. I believe one of the best things that can happen in our Western culture, which is common in other cultures, which was common for all cultures for a very long time, until we started going really non-sacramental, non-Catholic. One of the most therapeutic things we can do as a culture is to encourage whatever God has done, how God has made things. And in particular, when it comes to breastfeeding. See, what's happened in our culture, think of disintegration. Why do we have an entire franchise that's obsessed with looking at women's breasts? What's happened there? We've separated out their function from their ornamental character. So for most men, for men in our culture, it's amazing how warped men are in our culture. When it comes to women's breasts, they are entirely ornamental in a man's mind. It never even dawns on his subconscious that women's breasts have a function, a very important, beautiful function, and that breastfeeding is one of the most human, godly, beneficial things of all human action. Did you know that? I know a priest who did a PhD, doctoral dissertation on breastfeeding. A priest. Why a priest? Because a priest is supposed to be in touch with God and how God's ways are. And he's supposed to teach that and promote that and call other people to it. And he knew, he came to learn about that piece of God's revelation known as a mother breastfeeding her child. And the immense, immense beauty and benefits of that to the child, to the mother, to the world. And we have taken that and we have shamed it, as you saw in the cartoons. We have kicked women off of airplanes for doing it and doing it very prudently. Our perversion, our warpness when it comes to the body that God has made is off the charts, absolutely off the charts. It is little wonder why we have even bishops promoting contraception. We are warped, warped beyond measure. And one of the biggest indications is how we see or fail to see something like women breastfeeding a child. What is wrong with that? Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that tender? Isn't that just everything? And besides, when you are breastfeeding, how much of the breast do you really see? I mean, the baby's head is there. Here's a woman in my church. Now, here's a little glimpse into my church. There's me. It's right after liturgy. This is my church. I did all these paintings in here, by the way. And here's a woman walking out of church, and she's breastfeeding her baby. Notice she's doing it, you know, not in a showy way or whatever, but she knows I'm a theology body guy. She knows she can do that in my church. In fact, I quietly encourage women. What do women do? Customarily, I want to breastfeed their child in church. Where do they go, ladies? Where do you take your child, your baby? Where do women take their baby to breastfeed them when they have to breastfeed them in church? Where? They take it to the bathroom. They breastfeed a baby next to a toilet. What in God's name is that? This holy, holy action is relegated to a place where we poop, where we dump sewage. You don't think we're warped? I go in the ladies' bathrooms and I see a chair. They say, oh, that's for. Ladies put it in my own church. That's for women to come and sit there and breastfeed their baby in the toilet, by the toilet. You do it in church. One time, we were talking about this with a woman. A woman said, oh, I saw a mother breastfeeding her baby in church. And she was sitting up front, and the priest was giving a homily, and she shouldn't have done that because she was going to distract that priest. I said, if there's anybody who should be perfectly at ease with the woman breastfeeding her baby in church, it should be the priest. Because the priest should be the most in touch with the significance of that action in light of God's order of creation. What's wrong? That's a distraction? You don't even see her breast, basically. I mean, you see a head there. What's the distraction? What's the arousal? Except in a warped, perverted society that needs the theology of the body. Now, here's a scene from a mass with the Pope sitting there, bishops, and a bare-breasted woman standing in front of the altar. Now, does he look bothered? That's the Holy Father. This is not a trumped-up photo. This actually happened. This is at Mass, and she's giving the reading. And she's dressed, this is in New Guinea. She's dressed in traditional garb, which for them is considered to be formal attire. They look the least bit bothered. Again, now, what kind of a church, tell me, what kind of a church celebrates the Eucharist and chooses the vicar of Christ, the Pope, amidst floor-to-ceiling nudity with even genitalia on the ceilings. What kind of a church would do that? Some kind of cult? No. It's a truly Catholic church that would do that. And what did John Paul II call this floor-to-ceiling nudity by Michelangelo? He called it the sanctuary of the theology of the body. He said Michelangelo had it right. And he put it on the ceiling. In fact, he knew the human body so well and its beauty that he would use it in architectural motifs, where most artists would use plants or kind of building type of thing, like they would just use pillars and things. He would actually use the human body. He just had an endless understanding of the endless beauty of the human body. Look at this magnificent piece of work. Look at this, the flow of that composition. Very powerful. Looking out at you, drawing you in, flowing around, light, shade, composition, everything. Masterpiece. Just gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. What's that?
Is it true that statements often made that Michelangelo's female form looks masculine?
Michelangelo had a preference for the female from the male form in terms of its power. Now he made females powerful too, but still feminine. I think you can see, like, you know, Eve. This is Eve here, Adam and Eve. Look at her face, very feminine, beautiful. And he did so because he was trying to portray the incarnation, the reality incarnation, that and the eschaton. Remember we talked about original man and eschatological man? Michelangelo was portraying that, trying to capture that through art. That if God had this original intention, that we were these magnificent beings, and we have a destiny of being spiritualized and glorified, and Christ came in, you know, the historical man we talked about yesterday, and redeemed this body and took it on, then there's all this glory that was intended and will be for the human person, body, soul, mind. And so he said, I will portray them in this glorified, beautiful, magnificent, like superhuman, supercentral way to communicate the reality of the incarnation, the origins of man, the redemption, and the destiny. Now, I'm going to compare something. See this? This painting from Michelangelo, Sistine Chapel. Now, look at Eve. Look at her. Look at her. Look at the painting of Eve. Now, look at this. Okay, I'm going to compare the two. See how similar they are? Now, here is art that's used in the church, and here is just a secular painting. But notice how similar they are in their composition and their intentionality. This, of course, had a little more theological intention. This has an intention of innocence and beauty. Here you have another beautiful composition. And in this scene here, because now I'm going to show you some other things about Catholic art. The pictures you're about to see were used in Catholic churches as Catholic art. Now they were removed when Protestantism came in and started to then influence Catholicism as it does today. Most Catholics today are not deeply Catholic in their ethos. We're sort of quasi-Protestant with a Catholic wrapping. And that's because of the influence, the profound influence of Protestantism and secularism from the 16th century on. This gesture here, see that? It's called the chin chuck. That was used in art to designate the fact that this is not just a little child going coochie-coo with his mother. That was actually a code. It meant that they actually had a spousal relationship. That he would become, as we said yesterday, the new Adam, she the new Eve. And they would reconceive the human race. Now look at this, look at the art, the lighting in here. And I'm going to show you something that in the next few paintings that you see here. Notice how this part's very clear, very evident. Look at this. This is the Blessed Mother presenting a Christ child to visitors. Now, look at her hand. What is she doing? Why is her hand down here? This is art that was in Catholic churches used for prayer and worship. You see, these are obviously holy pictures. Here's a picture of the, you know, St. Bernard had a vision of being fed milk from the Virgin Mary's breasts. It's called the Lactation of Saint Bernard. It's a famous painting. You know that? Now we'd find out to be, what? How could a saint think of that? That's perverted. Because we're good Protestants. We're not really Catholic, if we think that way. Only the Catholic ethos could have this. Okay, what is going on here? Why did the artist paint that? Why did they paint in such a way where even the Blessed Mother seems to be presenting the genitalia of her son, Jesus? Let's see if you know. We've gone this far in this retreat. Can you tell me? I want to see how Catholic you are now. How theology of body are you? Is it seeping into you? Is it getting into your ethos? You tell me what's going on with that art. Why would they do that? Yes. Very good. Very, very, very good. Very good. I'll just tweak it a little bit. Yes, exactly. You used the magic word. It was to show the reality of the incarnation. That God incarnate himself into our being was complete. Even he was fully human. And what was the mark of being fully human? Even being sexual. And they knew what was it that was most in need of redemption? Our sexuality. They knew, as she just said here, that our sexuality was our sharing in God's love for us, how we will love, how we can love as God loves in the very life of the Trinity. That our sexuality was a manifestation of that spousal relationship between Christ the bridegroom and us. And this is why they painted Christ this way. And one of the reasons they did also, because this vision was being attacked by Protestantism. And these artists knew that we cannot lose this vision. Maybe they knew so far ahead that if we lost this vision, we'd end up in a culture like we have today that's completely pornified. And bishops are asking for contraception and people don't know what gender they are. Maybe those artists knew. They must have known that if we lost this vision, this is how we'd end up. And so they put that vision on canvas and they put it in front of us. Rightfully so, Catholically so. I went to Vienna one time, sitting in a concert, one of the famous concert halls there. I'm looking around and said, wow. I look at the pillars and then I notice they're going to take a look. Oh my goodness, all these pillars going all around this famous concert hall. You know, first you think, oh, they're just pillars. Then you look at it, oh my gosh, they're all bare-breasted women. Thought to myself, Vienna, one of the most classic Catholic cultures ever existed. Only a Catholic culture could do that. Now, we're going to talk about this at the end, my last talk. Keep this in mind for our last talk this afternoon. This here is St. Peter's. This is the main altar where the Pope celebrates liturgy. You see it on TV on Christmas and so on. Over the altar, this is a grand baldacchino. It's like a canopy made of bronze. It was a bronze that was melted down by the church from the Pantheon, the pagan temple. The dome was bronze. They took that bronze, and they Bernini made this most famous column. So they spiral down. It's kind of hard to see here. It's a little bit light. But this canopy is designed by Bernini back in the 1600s, after the design of an Old Testament Jewish wedding canopy that goes over the wedding bed. Why? Because he knew that the altar was the nuptial bed upon which the mystical marriage between Christ, the bridegroom, and the bride will be consummated in the Eucharist. He knew, the artists knew them, the church knew them, laity knew them, something we've forgotten, that we have to rediscover. He knew that everything, as John Paul II said, comes down to the spousal mystery. That the Eucharist is the great spousal union between the bridegroom Christ and his bride, the church, where he gives his body and we give ours, and we together mystically consummate that marriage. And this is why at St. Peter's, over the altar where the Pope celebrates Mass, is a wedding canopy. This is Catholic. Okay, I'm going to finish up here. These are some of my techniques for overcoming pornography, addiction, and lust, and so like that. If you want techniques. Most importantly, of course, is to understand how to see. Okay, so first of all, never look at pornography. John Paul II used the word pornovision, which is probably more appropriate. I know it's easy to say because we get hit with it, but still, I got to put it up front. Never even look at it. Just don't go there, period. See, pray, and pass on. See something that is beautiful. Offer it as a, offer prayer. How many of your works, Lord, of wisdom, made them all? Memorize the psalm. See a beautiful woman, guy. See a beautiful girl, right? Beautiful woman. Wow, praise God. God, you made so many things beautiful. Made the trees beautiful. Look outside. It's beautiful. And then pass on. Move on. This is one of the key things to overcoming lust. Study Honest Art, what we just went through. Make the image to a real person. You know, some of those billboards you see with the girls that are soft porn, they objectify women. It's just an object, just a body up there. You see that? Make a story about her. Give her a name. Make her a real person. Say a prayer to her, for her. Think to yourself, you know, she's probably a single mother, had to do this stupid job, sell her body to make money. I'll pray for her. I'll give her a name and I'll pray for her. I'll make her a real person. The Jesus Prayer, for those of you who were at prayer this morning, learned the Jesus Prayer. If you weren't there, I can tell you later about it. Very, very profound prayer to ward off temptation. And, of course, oldies but goodies, some things you just can't improve on, the sacraments, confession and Eucharist. And finally, you won't probably understand this unless you're in America, but the coach. You know what the coach is? Okay. All right. In American football, there was a famous coach named Mike Ditka. He was for the Chicago Bears. In Chicago, you think I have an accent. When Chicago, they talk like this. They don't say like the THs. They'll say like for them or those. They'll say them and those. Yeah, them guys over there. You know, those guys over there. That's how I know you're from Chicago. Well, Mike Ditka would talk like that. He was a tough Chicago guy. And in fact, they nicknamed him the coach. Like Chicagoans make fun of themselves, you know. Instead of saying the coach, they say the coach. He's the coach. And he would say that, yeah, I'm the coach of this team. I'm the coach. Anyway, he was a tough guy. And he was the coach, man. And you know what? Because of how he was, that's the last time the Chicago Bears won the Super Bowl. So I say you got to have that voice of the coach in your head. You got to have that tough voice that's just saying, knock it off. You can do this. Turn away. You know, pray. Look at it right. Guys especially need that. We kind of need to have a little something to beat on us a bit. So it's no one thing. It's all these things together to bring us beyond lust and pornography. Most importantly, in addition to prayer, of course, is to put on those sacramental glasses. Just learn to see. Don't be afraid. We don't run from our sexuality. We run into it, but with the right vision. That's the only way we'll come to a true purity of heart. We're not going to be pure by running away. We're going to be pure by moving into this whole world of the human body and sexuality, but with the right sacramental view. Okay, again, wrap it up. Like we did last night, this is where we're finding human sexuality. Unfortunately, we've done that in our culture. We're trying to do this. That's what the odd body is trying to do. So two become one again, and they become integrated. So that we bless the pure of heart, for they shall see God.
That was Father Thomas Lawyer with part two of Moving Beyond Lust and Pornography. This presentation was part of the Theology of the Body retreat held at the Mount Schoenstatt Retreat Center in Malgoa, and which was organized by the Family and Life Office from the Diocese of Parramatta. And for more talks, interviews, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.